content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to our August 2020 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across the state. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in the program. This program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection, by the way. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. And if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program. Now, this month we're going to take a look at some of the most popular books checked out within the past few months at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Let's begin with our first book. It's called Lost Boy Found by Kirsten Alexander. Now, this is a Southern historical novel based on the true story of a boy's mysterious disappearance, and it examines despair, loyalty, and the nature of truth. Here's the plot. In 1913, on a summer's day at Half Moon Lake, Louisiana, 4-year-old Sonny Davenport walks into the woods and never returns. The boy's mysterious disappearance from the family's lake house makes front page news in their hometown of Opelousas. John Henry and Mary Davenport are wealthy and influential, and they will do anything to find their son. For 2 years, the Davenports search across the South, offer increasingly large rewards, and struggle not to give in to despair. Then, at the moment when all hope seems lost, the boy is found in the company of a tramp. But is he truly Sonny Davenport? Well, the circumstances of his discovery raise more questions than answers. And when Grace Mill, an unwed farm worker, travels from Alabama to lay claim to the child, newspapers, town folk, even the Davenports' own friends take sides. It sounds like an interesting one. It was the most popular book, by the way, during the month of July at the Library for the Blind. It's called Lost Boy Found by Kirsten Alexander. Now here's another one that I think many people have enjoyed. It's called Lake Season by Denise Hunter. When their parents die in a tragic accident, Molly Bennett and her siblings pull together to fulfill their parents' dream, turning their historic home back into an inn. Adam Bradford, also known as best-selling author Nathaniel Gray, is a reclusive author with a bad case of writer's block. A deadline approaching and desperate for some inspiration, he travels to a North Carolina lake town, the setting of his next novel. Now, there he immediately meets his muse, a young innkeeper who fancies herself in love with his alter ego. When Molly finds an old letter in the walls of her inn, she embarks on a mission to find the star-crossed lovers and bring them the closure that they deserve. But the guest she invites along has secrets of his own, and the answers Molly finds may not be the ones that she was looking for. Sounds like a good one. It's called Lake Season, and it's by Denise Hunter. Now let's take a look at a book called Outvox by Sandra Brown, another very popular author. Brown has published 70 bestsellers, and this one employs her usual template of thriller spiked with romance, its main character, Drex Easton, is an FBI agent in pursuit of a serial killer. But for him, it's personal. When he was a boy, his mother left him and his father for another man, Weston Graham. Drex believes Graham murdered her and that he has killed at least 7 more women after emptying their bank accounts. Now he thinks he has the clever Graham, current alias Jasper Ford, in his sights, and he's willing to put his career at risk in order to catch him. The women Ford targets are wealthy, and his new prey is no exception, except that, uncharacteristically, he has married her. Talia Ford proves to be a complication for Drex, who instantly falls in lust with her, even though he's not at all sure she isn't her husband's accomplice. Posing as a would-be novelist, Drex moves into an apartment next door to the Ford's posh home and tries to ingratiate himself, but tensions rise immediately. Jasper is suspicious, and Talia has mixed feelings about Drex's flirtatious behavior. When Talia's fun-loving friend Elaine Connor turns up dead after a cruise on her yacht and Jasper disappears, Drex and Talia become allies. There are a few action sequences and fewer sex scenes, but the novel's pace bogs down repeatedly in long, mundane conversations. Drex's two FBI agent sidekicks are more interesting characters than he is. Drex himself is such a caricature of a macho man, so heedless of ethics, and so aggressive toward women, that it's tough to see him as a good guy. Brown adds a couple of implausible twists at the very end that make him seem almost as untrustworthy as Graham. This thriller about the pursuit of a serial killer suffers from an unpleasant hero and a glacial pace. But I have to, despite the somewhat negative review there, this is one of the most popular books of the past month at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. So I think you might enjoy it. It's called Outfox, and it is by Sandra Graham. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I had, after talking about those characters there, had Graham on the mind. It's by Sandra Brown, Outfox, it's called. Now let's move on to a fun book called The Bake Shop by Amy Clipston. This is a return to Lancaster County with the first installment of Amy Clipston's charming new Amish Marketplace series. If you haven't read this series, I think you would enjoy this one. Christiana Kurtz loves to bake, but when her bake stand becomes too busy, her mother encourages her to move her business to the local market. Her new bake shop becomes so inundated with customers that the line blocks the leather and woodcraft shop next door, which is run by Jeffrey Stolfus. When Jeffrey complains that her stand is driving away business due to the lines, she complains to him that his personalization machine smells. Though their relationship starts off on a bad footing, they eventually forge a friendship. When Christiana's father makes a surprise visit to the market, he is upset to find that Jeffrey uses the building's electricity to personalize his items. He tells Christiana that Jeffrey is too modern for her and she's forbidden from dating him. Christiana is crushed, but she knows that she must obey her father. When Jeffrey's shop catches on fire one day, he puts the entire market in jeopardy, including Christiana's bake shop. Christiana, however, can't deny how she feels about Jeffrey despite his mistakes. Though the odds are against them, can two young people find a way to rebuild both their businesses and their relationship? Well, you'll have to read this book to find out. It's called The Bake Shop by Amy Clipston. Now we're going to take a look at a relatively new book by Cynthia Hand. In her book, The How and the Why, Delving into the Past is a difficult journey. Well, 18 years ago, a teenage girl placed her baby for adoption. That girl grew up to be Cass. Although her wonderful parents adore her, Cass still wonders where she came from. As she considers whether to search for her past, Cass learns that her first mother wrote a series of letters to her years ago, letters that will hold many clues, but could also spark new questions or concerns. Should she dig into her past? What will her parents think? Does her first mother even want to be found? Well, Cass's dilemma is set against the backdrop of her preparations for college, which in itself provides plenty of challenges for Cass. Her father, who is pushing her to attend his alma mater, and her best friend, Nyla, who wins the coveted drama scholarship Cass wanted. Well, Cass's story is interwoven with letters from S., Cass's first mother, reflecting on her life at the home and struggling to write words for her daughter to read many years from now. The how and the why presents an honest and accurate view of how many adopted teens must feel, wanting to plan their futures while still wondering about their pasts. A well-rounded cast of characters and a fully developed story make this an absorbing read. I think you'll like this one. It's called The How and the Why, and it's by Cynthia Hand. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, a program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks for joining me today. It's great to have you with us. We have another book to look at right now that is The Indifferent Stars Above. That's the name of the book. It's a harrowing saga of the Donner Party, and it's by Daniel James Brown. Here's the plot. In April of 1846, 21-year-old Sarah Graves, intent on a better future, set out west from Illinois with her new husband, her parents, and 8 siblings. Now, 7 months later, after joining a party of emigrants led by George Donner, they reached the Sierra Nevada Mountains as the first heavy snows of the season closed the pass ahead of them. Well, in early December, starving and desperate, Sarah and 14 others set out for California on snowshoes and over the next 32 days endured almost unfathomable hardships and horrors. In this gripping narrative, Daniel James Brown sheds new light on one of the most infamous events in American history. Following every painful footstep of Sarah's journey with the Donner Party, Brown produces a tale both spellbinding and richly informative. Sounds like an interesting time, April of 1946. That's called The Indifferent Stars Above, the saga of the Donner Party, and it's by Daniel James Brown. Next, a popular book by an author that I really don't remember reading too much about on this program. Her name is Susan May Warren. You may be familiar with her. This is a book entitled The Way of the Brave. Former pararescue jumper Orion Starr is haunted by the memory of a rescue gone wrong. He may be living alone in Alaska now, but the pain of his failure and his injuries has followed him there from Afghanistan. He has no desire to join Hamilton Jones' elite rescue team, but he also can't shirk his duty when the call comes in to rescue 3 lost climbers on Denali. Former CIA profiler and psychiatrist Jenny Calhoun's yearly extreme challenge with her best friends is her only escape from the guilt that has sunk its claws into her. As a consultant during a top-secret mission to root out the Taliban, she green-lighted an operation that ends in ambush and lives lost. When her cathartic climb on Denali turns deadly, she'll be forced to trust her life and the lives of her friends to the most dangerous of heroes, the man she nearly killed. Her skills and his experience are exactly what's needed to prevent another tragedy. But in order to truly set Orion free from his painful past, Jenny will have to reveal hers, and they'll have to put their wounds behind them to survive. But at what cost? Leap into action with this high-octane, breakneck new series from best-selling author Susan May Warren. That sounds like another good one. I think you'll enjoy it. It's called The Way of the Brave by Susan May Warren. Most of the books we talk about on this program are novels, but every now and then a true story, a nonfiction work, creeps into the top 10 there, some of the most popular books in any given month. That's the case with this one. The title is Betrayal in Berlin, a true story of the Cold War's most audacious espionage operation, and it's by Steve Vogel. This astonishing true story of the Berlin Tunnel, one of the West's greatest espionage operations of the Cold War, and the dangerous Soviet mole who betrayed it. Its code name was Operation Gold, a wildly audacious CIA plan to construct a clandestine tunnel into East Berlin to tap into critical KGB and Soviet military telecommunications lines. Now, the tunnel crossing the border between the American and Soviet sectors would have to be a 1,500 feet, which, by the way, is the length of the Empire State Building, with state-of-the-art equipment built and operated literally under the feet of their Cold War adversaries. Success would provide the CIA and the British Secret Intelligence Service access to a vast treasure of intelligence. Exposure might spark a dangerous confrontation with the Soviets. Yet, as the Allies were burrowing into the German soil, a traitor codenamed Agent Diamond by his Soviet handlers was burrowing into the operation itself. Now, Betrayal in Berlin is Steve Vogel's heart-pounding account of this operation. He vividly recreates post-war Berlin, a scarred, shadowy snake pit with thousands of spies and innumerable cover stories. It is also the most vivid account of George Blake, perhaps the most damaging mole of the Cold War. Drawing upon years of archival research, secret documents, and rare interviews with Blake himself, Vogel has crafted a true-life spy story as thrilling as the novels of John le Carré and Lynn Dayton. Betrayal in Berlin includes 24 photos and 2 maps, and it sounds like an excellent book if you're into a true story from the post-Cold War period. Betrayal in Berlin by Steve Vogel. Next, a little bit longer narrative for you. I'm going to read a review of Deep State, a book by Chris Haughty. And this was reviewed by Joe Hartlob in January of this year, 2020. He's a reviewer that we've read many times on this program. It begins this way. Deep State is terrific. It is immediately engrossing, features a strong and endearing protagonist, and coasts along so smoothly and quickly that one never misses the fact that there is no good place to stop reading, if only temporarily. It is everything that a classic thriller, particularly a political thriller, should be. The book is the creation of Chris Haughty, that's spelled H-A-U-T-Y, by the way, who has written the scripts for any number of major films. I discovered, after the fact, that he penned the screenplay for one of my favorite movies, which many will be surprised to know, is Homeward Bound 2, Lost in San Francisco. This is the Joe Hartlob, the reviewer, speaking. Deep State reads like a screenplay treatment, right down to its point of view transitions, which might move just a hair too fast in print. but on the screen of your choice, you would travel just fine. Thank you. Someone needs to make a feature of this one on the condition that he or she doesn't change a thing. I'm digressing, and I apologize, says the reviewer. You're here to learn about the book. Very well. Deep State begins by introducing readers to the wonderfully named Haley Chill, a multi-talented armor grunt who leaves military service to take a position as a low-level, at first, White House intern. Haley is possessed of many advantages and disadvantages, the former of which outweigh the latter. She is from an all but impoverished family in West Virginia, who at the relatively young age became the sole support of her younger siblings, sending most of her army wages home to them. Her attributes include her photographic memory, coupled with superior powers of observation, and an attitude that does not permit failure or submission. She brings this skill set to a White House helmed by a duly-elected but controversial president who is loved and loathed in equal measure. In the midst of the political chaos swirling around Washington, D.C., the president's chief of staff is found dead of an apparent heart attack. Haley, who is the first to find his body, notices a single clue that suggests his death may not have been happenstance. She unwittingly has stumbled onto and into the first salvo against the president, launched by a group of powerful individuals within the government, and in some cases merely a few feet away from him. As Haley soon discovers, she is close to some of the plotters as well. When the removal of the chief of staff fails to deter the president from his mission, those assembled against him plan more drastic measures. Haley suspects quite a bit, but isn't really in a position to do much, other than what she can. Of course, one must remember that as far as she is concerned, failure is never an option. I would wager that most readers of Deep State will say, "I didn't see that coming," at least once. It is full of twists and turns, including a big one at the conclusion. Now, that surprise put me in the mind of another of my favorite movies, but I won't tell you which one because it might spoil the elaborately crafted plot that Haughty labored over for our enjoyment. I can only say that if you were in front of me, I would forcefully place Deep State into your hands and guarantee that you will enjoy every single page of it as much for Haley as for the plot, the writing, and, well, everything. This has got to be one of the most enthusiastic reviews by Joe Hartlob that I have ever read, and we do read him periodically on this program. The book is called Deep State by Chris Haughty, and the reviewer, Joe Hartlob, absolutely loved it, and, well, maybe you would too. And this is Heard Any Good Books Lately on the North Carolina Reading Service, getting near the end of the program. But a little bit more for you. Let's take a look at a book called The Window on the Bay by Debbie McComber. Very, very popular author. We have many of her books on this program. McComber threatens to set her latest beach read in Paris, but her characters have other plans. Here's the plot. Maureen Zielinski and Jenna Bolts have been friends since college. Years ago, their plans to go to Paris were thwarted when Maureen found out that she was pregnant. Well, now that they're both single mothers whose children have left the nest, the time is right to dust off their passports and try again. In a somewhat disappointing turn of events, Maureen and Jenna don't make it to Paris just yet. Instead, they stay in Seattle and pursue new love interests. Jenna, a nurse, meets orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rowan Lancaster in the emergency room after her mother falls and hurts her hip. Maureen, against her better judgment, accepts a date with Logan, a union plumber who frequents the library where she works. Well, Jenna is afraid to date a coworker after her workplace romance with her ex failed. But when Rowan proves to be a good listener, she's more willing to discuss her options. Maureen doesn't think she'll fit in with Logan and his beer-drinking buddies, but she's surprised when she enjoys their date at a football game. Well, meanwhile, Jenna worries about her children, Allie and Paul, as they navigate college and life. Though the story is primarily told from the two mothers' perspectives, Allie breaks into the narrative with a surprising connection to Rowan. Maureen's daughter, Tori, also takes on the role of confidant. The happy endings and potential travel plans unfold with a touch of realism to contrast the idyllic backdrop of the Pacific Northwest. Despite the false start with this heartwarming story, it sweetly balances friendship and mother-child bonding with romantic love. It sounds like another lovely work by Debbie McComber, and I think you'll enjoy it. It was one of the most popular books in the past month at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. And I think we have time to do one more book here before we wrap up this August program. This one is entitled Bryson City Takes, Stories of a Doctor's First Year by Walt Larimore. Here's the plot. Captivating stories of how a young doctor's first year of medical practice in the Smoky Mountains shaped his practice of life and faith. The little mountain hamlet of Bryson City, North Carolina, offers more than dazzling vistas. Many of us have been to that beautiful area of our state. For Walt Larimore, a young Flatlander physician setting up his first practice, the town presents its peculiar challenges as well. With the winsomeness of a James Herriot book, Bryson City Tales sweeps you into a world of colorful characters. The texture of Smoky Mountain life and the warmth, humor, quirks, and struggles of a small country town. It's a world where the family doctor is also the emergency physician, the coroner, and the obstetrician, and where wilderness medicine is part of the job. Search and rescue calls in the national forest are a way of life, and the next patient just may be somebody's livestock or pet. Bryson City Tales is the tender and insightful chronicle of a young man's rite of passage from medical student to family physician. Laughter and adventure await you in these pages, and lessons learned from Bryson City's unforgettable residents. That sounds like a good one, particularly if you live in or have ever been to North Carolina in the western part of the state. Beautiful town called Bryson City. The book is Bryson City Tales, Stories of a Doctor's First Year by Walt Larimore. And that's all for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately. I'm George Douglas. Hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind, simply Google or search for North Carolina Library for the Blind, or you can call toll-free at 1-888-388-2460. You can also use those same numbers to become a member of the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind. This program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available after the broadcast on our website, North Carolina Reading Service.